This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you on a... Seth just had a moment during the break.
Just had a moment to thank God it wasn't on air, but I'll rehash it. Basically, I confused Danny Amendola and Rex Burkhead.
Pretty racist, I'm not going to lie.
It was racist as heck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that was racist AH, I tell
racist
you.
Racist AH, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I was confused because you were going, man.
Don't go into detail about how wrong I was on it. Yeah.
Okay, I won't.
I just, in my mind, Amendola and Burkhead got mixed up.
That's all right. That's okay. Let's get to the Texans. How about we do that? Are the Texans hearing any of the outside noise? This was D'Amico Ryan's answer to a question about finishing games. What is preventing you guys from finishing games right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've been in every game we've talked about, we've been in the games. We just, you know, people, I guess it's this narrative like we just not a good team, but we've been in games, we just haven't made the plays that, and it's not from a matter of, you know, effort and those things. It's a matter of being on the details, and that's what the league is about. The team who are on the details, especially in those critical moments. You talk about third down, red zone, like a situational ball. When you're on it and you're able to make those plays, that's winning football, right? We've been on the back end of that. We haven't won games. We haven't played well on third down. We haven't played well in the red zone, offensively and defensively. So when you win those situations, you put yourself in a good spot to win games. So when I talk about executing and playing well, it's executing in those critical moments is what we have been done when we've lost games.
Okay, and I think that's all accurate. For some context, and I'm going to focus on the offensive side of the ball because that's really the side that hasn't been doing its job, especially in the second halves of football games. Red zone this year, offensively, the Texans, middle of the pack, they're 15th. Got to be better than that if you're going to win a Super Bowl, but they're not awful. The problem is in the last three games, they're 30th. They're awful in the last three games.
Yeah.
What's been the problem the last three games? Pressure on the quarterback. Third down, they're 16th on the season, right in the middle. The last three games, they're 24th. So they're in the bottom quartile of the league there in third down over the last three games. So he's right, D'Amico. Like, situationally, they've not done well, and they've lost two of three. No coincidence there. The one game they won was another tightrope act that they won at the end against the Indianapolis Colts. The thing that jumped out at me in that cut there, Seth, the quote narrative that we're not a good team. Is there a narrative that they're not a good team out there?
There's a narrative that they're a mediocre team, which is 100% accurate based on just about every stat you look at. I mean, you don't have to, don't even go to the advanced charts where all these different analytical charts where they graph out all the teams. Like, the Texans find themselves smack dab, like, in the center of these graphs all the time. We're all these different metrics. But, like, the biggest one and the most telling stat is just the points for and points against. They've scored one more point than their opponents this year so far.
Yeah.
Like, they are a 500 football team that's won some close games. Got throttled in a game against the Vikings. Got throttled by the Jets. So that skews it a little bit.
It was only eight. It was only eight. They lost by to the Jets. I mean, they can get destroyed.
Yeah, it's compared to like a 3-win game or a 3-point win or loss, etc. I mean, they got throttled in that game. Yeah.
Right. But as long as we're talking about point differential, like the Vikings game is what really skews it pretty badly for them. But the problem isn't on the loss side. The problem is on the fact that they only win close games, except for against the Patriots. That's the issue.
I think if you go back to early in the season when every week we're coming in saying, hey, don't ignore in victory what you would address in defeat, that there were those things. I think at the time you thought, okay, if they would just stop making these mistakes, then they could really be putting some of these lesser teams away and beating them more authoritatively. But what did in fact happen was, okay, you keep making those same mistakes, and versus the good teams, they're going to really take advantage of it. And then also, as the season goes along, the bad teams are going to pick up on your mistakes. And all of a sudden, you're down in the muck slugging it out with a two-win football team because they know what your weaknesses are. They know what you can and cannot do. And yeah, the trajectory matters. They're not... They haven't been playing like a good football team. They've been playing like a mediocre football team for some time now.
Yeah, just for some context on the point differential discussion, the Texans are plus one. They, as you pointed out, Seth, they're plus. If they don't kick a field goal to try to narrow the gap against the Jets at the end there, if they try to go for a touchdown instead of a field goal and they don't get in the end zone, we're talking about a 6-3 team with a negative point differential right now. You know what I mean? So just for some context, the Buffalo Bills, 7-2, their point differential is plus 87. The Steelers are 6-2, their point differential is plus 68. And they don't even have a good quarterback. The Ravens are 6-3, same record as the Texans, plus 64. So, the win-loss record is the most important thing in terms of getting into the dance at the end of the year. But forgive us if we're handicapping you as a team that when you go up against some of these other teams in the near future, including the Lions on Sunday, and the Lions, if you want to know, have a point differential of plus 110, which is by far the best in the NFL, by far. So that's why things get handicapped the way they do, is because... If you're going to tightrope every week, some weeks you're going to fall on the wrong side of it, and like they did against the Jets on Thursday last week. You know, so you play with fire, you get burned. The narrative that they're not a good team. I'm not saying like they're not a. I mean, they have a lot of talent. They have a good record. I this offensive line thing is what's bugging everybody. You know, that's the biggest thing. If they were to fix the offensive line, if the offensive line were to be playing average, I think the temperature on the fan base would get turned down significantly right now.
I think that, you know, right now, you look at the Texans offense, they're 17th in points per game. Mm-hmm. And that's been a little bit of a slide downwards from where they were up around 13 or 14 a couple weeks ago. Now they're down to 17th. The Chiefs had been right in lockstep with the Texans, but they started to elevate a little bit. Like we don't have to go to advanced stats here. The Texans offense is 17th in scoring right now. Everything they've done looks like a team that would be no better than 17th in scoring right now. And you're facing a really good defense this week.
Yeah.
The problem is, so when D'Amico says people are acting like we're not a good football team, well, the defense is good, but they're not so good that you can win a championship with this defense. This is not going to be one of those rare teams that wins a Super Bowl with an average offense and a dominant defense, unless they get that much better by the end of the season. Yeah. So, yeah, they're not. I can't call them a good. I call them a mediocre, average football team in the NFL right now. Yeah. Their record is a little bit better than that, but the slide has been way more towards a 500 football team.
Yep. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. He was asked, is there a re-emphasizing of confidence in your team now that the trade deadline has come and gone?
I didn't emphasize anything to our team. Like, we have the guys we have. I mean, everybody thinks the trade deadline comes and you're going to, find this guy who's going to save your team. I don't see it that way, right? Transactions were made across the league, and there has to be two parties available to do a trade. Everybody's antsy about trades. It's not just us going and taking somebody from another team. People have to be available, and the trade has to be on good terms for everyone. So I know everybody's in an uproar about us trading at the deadline. It's like, it's not from a lack of us working to get our team better and improve our team, but there's no savior coming to save our team, and there has to be two parties involved in trading.
Yeah, I think with the trade deadline, I'm glad D'Amico framed it that way, because I think there's two things going on with the trade deadline. There is the perception that, well, the Texans are just sitting on their hands and not doing anything. No, I'm sure there were phone calls being made about guys around the league, and there were offers that went back and forth, and ultimately, in terms of bringing somebody in, they never arrived at a trade for anybody. So that part, I'm very confident that there was a lot of activity going on with the Texans. As D'Amico pointed out on his coach's show, and as Nick Caserio has pointed out many times, both on their Texans All Access show, and on this show, they're always looking to upgrade their team and looking to make their team better. So I'm very confident that there was plenty of stuff going on for the they just sat on their hands and didn't do anything crowd. No, there was a lot of activity. They just didn't make any trades. I think what I'm nervous about with the lack of activity is, do they have the same view of their depth and their roster as we do out here? Are they overly loyal, or do they look right at some of their guys maybe through a prism that may be a little too rosy? You know, when it comes to depth guys, I'm talking about.
Well, and I think when it comes to the way players perceive it, the one big difference between the like Major League Baseball deadline and the football deadline is that players are not... In baseball, it doesn't matter how good you are. As a player, you feel like, you know, okay, yeah, let's add some more pieces. Let's add some more pieces. And, you know, to the point where Dallas Keuchel was, you know, openly complaining about the fact that the Texans, or that the Astros didn't add a player at the first trade deadline back in 2017.
Yeah.
In football, I think there is more of a, hey, you know, we don't need reinforcements. We can do this. You don't feel like the front office lets you down if there's not a trade deadline deal. Because
yeah,
there aren't that. It's not the standard operating procedure. I think this year, though, one of the differences that you saw was that just a lot of the teams that are in contention right now, like the Chiefs, like the
Steelers,
like
Ravens, Bills, everybody near
Vikings,
you in the
all these other teams, they made changes, they made trades. And that's where it feels like this year is a little bit different in that, all right, these other teams, some of whom have beat you, are going out there and they're active at the trade deadline. And I trust that there was activity. Look, this is what I would say. As far as D'Amico saying, like, it's not like we didn't try. This is not a math test. I don't give credit for... I'm not going to give partial credit showing your work. Yeah. This is a classic. As far as fans or anybody else is concerned, show me the baby.
No, right. No, but there are people out there that think they just sat there and let the phones ring with 31 other teams, and the Texans just sat there and were playing Angry Birds or Candy Crush or whatever people are playing these days the whole time.
Sudoku seems to be big.
Sudoku is kind of back. Yeah, man. I see a lot of people playing.
It's back? It went away?
Well, it's I don't know that it went
Bring
away,
Sudoku
but it's
back.
Yeah. It's back
to
think
of like a 78-year-old guy singing about bringing Sudoku back.
Super hip. Here's CJ Stroud. Asked, have you been able to get with the offensive line to figure some things out?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of great conversation with him, and you know, I believe, you know, that sometimes it takes getting hit in the mouth and maybe getting hit in the mouth multiple times to wake up. And I believe that, you know, this is a wake up call for us to get things fixed. And you know, I understand, like, man, if we give ourselves a shot and we stay in the green, like we move the ball really well. We just, you know, got to finish. We got to be able to lose those one bad plays in a drive, or those two bad plays or the penalties. You know, it's always something. So if we can get rid of that, I believe that, you know, we can really be a great football team. And we already are, man. We're a really good football team. Like, there's no time to hang our heads down. It ain't that bad. Like, we're gonna figure it out for sure.
Yeah. Okay. I think they're hearing a lot of the rumblings in there. You know what I mean?
I think, yeah, or at the very least they're giving a heads up, or sometimes you can just tell by the tone of the questions. Because some guys do a good job of genuinely not looking at social media and everything. There's times where you can tell just by the tone of the questions.
Yeah.
I remember one time we were in a two-win football team, and I remember kind of like I was at a stage in my career where I just kind of wasn't really paying attention to the media or anything. We didn't have social media to worry about, but I was staying ignorant to a lot of the outside noise because I knew it was probably negative. The defensive line coach came in, Mike London, who'd go on to coach at the University of Virginia for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He came in and one morning he's like, listen, guys, you got to really just – don't be listening to these clowns on sports radio or anything else. And I'm like, oh, I guess the clowns on sports radio must be crushing the defensive line right now. So, like, obviously I'm aware of it. Thanks, coach, for protecting my mental health, brain. And then once you start imagining what they're saying about you, it's usually even way worse than what they're actually saying about you. But I got to go check out. The guy just told me that somebody's talking about me. Now I got to go listen to it.
So what did they, and was he right? Were they saying a lot of bad things about you guys?
Not about me personally, so it was cool.
Okay. They were most.
I always had. Now, Lance was always a big Seth Payne champion.
Yeah.
Like so, like Lance, and Lance is kind of the line play guru. Yeah. It was cool, and I had his constant endorsement. So I always got
so you were
I
cool.
Got off pretty easy with stuff.
So yeah. You just started listening every morning after that.
I was like, yeah, I got to listen to John and Lance to bolster my spirit.
These guys are making a lot of sense. My teammates are a bunch of clowns.
Nobody sees it quite the way Lance does. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. I wonder whatever happened to those guys.
Lance's dad was a big fan of mine. So that especially.
Dad was an O-line coach in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. His dad is an offensive line coach for a long, long time in the NFL. So it was cool.
Yep. CJ Stroud, what's the one thing you need to do more of? I tell you, I wasn't expecting this to be the answer. Things that you needed to, what are the things that you've realized you needed to work on? Seth, I want to play this answer, and I'm curious how you think this is going to play throughout the day today as CJ Stroud outlines this as the thing he needs to work on.
I would say I just got to have more fun. You know, I got to realize, you know, like God's put a great talent in me, and, you know, I'm not playing for anybody else. First and foremost, I'm playing for him. I'm playing for my family, then my teammates, you know, and I got to remember that. I got to remember, you know, my priorities, and, you know, like I can be joyful while, you know, suffering as well. You know, so that's something that I plan to do is just have more fun, you know, be joyful in those moments. Because, you know, when you're in these trials and tribulations, you know, it teaches you things about yourself and it teaches you to lean on him. And so that's what I plan to do and just, you know, lean on his strength. And, you know, and he's never forsaken me yet. So I plan, you know, to keep going and just have fun while doing it. You know, it's things I can get better fundamentally wise for sure. You know, just getting the ball in my hand and things like that. But ultimately, I believe it's just having fun and being joyful while doing it.
I think he's right. And, you know, you know, he was pointing out the Jets and how much fun they were having when Garrett Wilson was scoring those touchdowns.
Yeah.
It is a very weird vibe for a 6-3 team right now. I'm just taking the vibe that's out here outside the building and maybe applying it to what CJ is saying right there that, like, hey, for a 6-3 team, granted, a 6-3 team, they could very easily be 4-5 right now, you know, if it weren't for some Kymie Fairbairn field goals and some plays at the end of games. It is a very strange, like, teetering type of vibe right now, especially with this team coming to town on Sunday.
Well, okay, so, you know, we talked a lot about rat poison, the way Nick Saban uses the term rat poison, which is you hear all the positive stuff, and sometimes teams or players will start to delude themselves into thinking they're better than they actually are because they hear so much praise from the outside. I think in the NFL, you don't have to worry about that as much. I do think that one thing I was concerned about during training camp was the pressure that the individual players will put on themselves because of their expectations, and you hold yourself to a certain high standard, and that's all awesome, but sometimes it gets to the point where you're pressing, and you forget, I mean, for all the right reasons, because you're trying to push it to the next level and everything, you kind of forget about the basics of how hard it is just to do the simple stuff right in the NFL. And that's why I got nervous when they would talk about doing the 301 level stuff with the offense. Or, hey, because everybody already knows the offense, now we can take that next step. Yeah, that's true to a degree, but it always has to come back to really getting the basics right. And I think they might have jumped to it's. I feel like including Bobby Slowick, the players themselves, CJ Stroud and his expectations, it's almost like they took a math course where they hadn't taken the prerequisite. Like they went straight from basic algebra up into calculus.
Yeah.
You know, without the in-between steps. And then you're sitting there midway through the season and you're thinking, why are we not better at calculus now?
Right.
And it's because you never really nailed algebra. There's a back to basics part of it where I think you got to remember, all those cliches, taking what the defense gives you, getting 3 or 4 yards, getting 4 yards on a run play instead of a home run, all that stuff, it constantly has to be reinforced. And that's where this team, I think, they need to learn that part of the game. The same way the Astros can work through adversity because they've been through it so many times. They've got so many players on that team that don't panic. I feel like there's a little bit more of a conscious pressing by the Texans, it's probably been harmful for them offensively.
That is a really, really good way to put it. I do. I think there is some pressing going on right now, particularly on the offensive side of the football. No doubt. What led to C.J. Stroud realizing, hey, need to have more fun?
Really just prayer, you know, just really just spending time with God. And, I think the 3 days off was very nice, you know, to find time for your soul, you know, your body, you know, and your mental, you know. So, I believe, you know, that's where I kind of came from. And, you know, there's so many things going on in this world, you know, and we're called to be light, you know. It's entertainment business, you know, and we're called, you know, to entertain, but you can also have fun while doing it. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, as a team we can do better, is just have more fun celebrating and you know, just being like, you have a smile on your face right now. Like, you're having fun while doing your job, so we can do the same, you know.
So I had a fun little moment there with Landry.
With Landry, Landry's the one that asked the question.
Well, Landry asked, it was good because he asked a specific question as a follow-up to somebody else's, which is, he asked, like, yeah, how did you, like, was there a moment or how exactly did you come to this realization that you had to have more fun? As I was listening to CJ, maybe you have three or four answers yesterday where he mentioned the need to have fun.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm trying to put myself in the position of a lot of people listening, and I could see where a lot of people right now aren't in the mood right to hear that necessarily, like, is that being the solution? And obviously that can't be the only solution, but I do endorse it for CJ himself specifically, because I think CJ is a guy that puts a lot of pressure on himself, and you can almost see it sometimes as the season wears on, times where, man, it almost looks like he's a little bit beaten down, because he does take this stuff really, really seriously. He is that kind of guy that I think needs to be reminded sometimes that, hey, like, yeah, remember, it's got to be, you're going to be performing better if you're loose and you're having some fun. So I'm 100% cool with it with CJ. Now, if there's other players that if they got up there, like if Kenyon Green got up and said, man, we just got to get back to having fun, I'd be like, well, no, I just, yeah. You're like, the executioner telling me to have fun on my way up the gallows.
Right. Hey, the Grim Reaper.
Remember, live in the moment.
The Grim Reaper is telling me to have fun.
Have you ever put yourself in that situation? Like, thought about actually walking up the gallows to be hanged to death?
Not hanged. When I watch Braveheart, I always wonder what that would be like to be William Wallace in the last scene where they ripped out all of his guts on the on the dais up on the stage up there. You know, they laid him flat and they did the, you know, they gutted him, basically.
I feel like I'd be looking for the first ring to kiss. You know, I mean, who do I need to pledge allegiance to?
Bring me Longshanks. Like, I'll kiss his ring. Fine. Okay.
Yeah, but it was all worth it.
You called my bluff. Okay.
Well, it could be, you know, but they ended up with a free and independent Scotland, right?
They did, but it had to really hurt.
Did they, though? They didn't, did they?
They did, eventually. They had to battle a little bit more, but they eventually...
How did England get him back?
I don't know. I'm just going on what I saw in the movie. At the end of the movie... Robert the Bruce was pointing his sword and marching onto the battlefield, and spoiler alert, Scotland won their freedom.
Robert the Bruce got up and said, I will not go screw your euro.
Yeah.
I will not pay a single cent of euro.
Right. It's all about currency, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. 5-Hour Energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football superfans. And this is, I think, what you were... talking about, Seth, as far as like, okay, that CJ, let's have some more fun thing. Do you think God will joyfully tell CJ how to recognize the blitz pre-snap and we can watch him smile and laugh about it joyfully during the game? So, yeah, there's some of that on the text page. Like, cool that you need more joy. How about picking up the blitz? You know, like, how about this? How about that?
You know, a lot of the stuff that we were worried about early in the season, where it's really come to roost, is that they were a lot of the protections they were using were specifically designed to try to help out the interior offensive line. But when teams start to pick up on that, a lot of these simulated blitzes and everything else that you see, they're really able to game the system and know that, like, just. If you can just close your eyes, you don't have to be an expert in offensive line play or anything, just turn protection, where Laremy Tunsil slides down to the right, everybody slides to the right, you got a tight end sometimes having to try to block a defensive end. Like, that's all to help out the interior offensive line, the weakness. But because of that, yeah, that's when you can start seeing these corner blitzes and everything else. Or and you, they'll, you know, they can adjust who their free rushers are as soon as they see the turn protection. And there's nothing the O-line can do about it after the wheels are set in motion.
Yeah.
Teams have figured that out, that, okay, this is how the Texans are trying to fix the interior offensive line, and we're going to game it, and we're going to destroy C.J. Stroud for it. So now they're really stuck because their tendencies are on paper, their weaknesses are on film, and it goes back to, okay, I guess we got to just line up and beat guys individually. And the left guard position has not been able to
can't
do that.
Can't do it. Not even close. Yeah. Now, CJ's getting some support on the 5-Hour Energy fan line as well. It's an effing game. They need to loosen up sometimes and remember that. I think that's what CJ's saying. One more.
Hey, don't use the F word, man. I was basically agreeing with your sentiment.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah, don't get hot, texter. It's hard to do. This is another text. It's hard to do, but life is way better if you can find joy in what you do.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Agreed. I endorse it 100%.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying I know how it's going to play with a lot of people.
Seth and I are, I think you and I are both pro CJ on his take about needing to have more fun, right?
Two quick things. Scotland was separate and independent from the 9th century up until the Act of Union in 1707.
Okay, yeah.
So good job. Good job, Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
Enduring torture to inspire a nation.
Way to go.
For a while.
You sacrificed your lower intestines for Scotland's independence. Way to go.
Yeah, 8 centuries of independence out of that.
Yeah, man.
Good job.
Robert the Bruce is getting destroyed on the 5-Hour Energy fan line. Robert the Bruce was a coward, all caps. He was. He double-crossed William Wallace. Remember that? Because his leper dad told him, like, no, you cannot side with him.
Then he had, but because he had that kerchief from Mel Gibson's dead wife.
Yeah.
That inspired him to go on, right?
To watch Braveheart tonight, I think. Where's Braveheart on your movie scale? Are you a Braveheart fan? Are you like it?
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a long time.
A lot of football players from your era cite Braveheart.
It's a good pregame. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was a time when I had convinced myself that I totally would have let myself get disemboweled for a
cause. Right, that you were liberating Jacksonville your rookie year.
Yeah, now I'd be like, this is all just going to get just misrepresented in memes afterwards. So why bother?
When they finally
why bother? It's up to the mercy of it doesn't matter. Whatever.
When someone finally takes this invention called Twitter that I thought of and actually puts it in play 10 years from now, these things are all going to get memed.
So when CJ is talking up there about, you know, using his faith in God helps him keep the right perspective and everything.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, you know, there are a lot of great stories of great people out there who, you know, historical figures who have been imprisoned for some reason and maintained a positive attitude throughout, despite the most dire of circumstances. People, you know, Holocaust survivors and what have you. Never fact check those stories, everybody, because some of them are truly and indeed inspirational. Others are like, oh, yeah, this guy was like a political prisoner for 6 months where he was.
Oh.
Yeah, he was staying like a fancy room in somebody's palace.
Club
so,
fed.
Like, yeah, all right, great. Yeah, this guy kept his positive attitude when he was never really in any like imminent threat of doom or anything like that.
So just
take it for what it's worth and run with
it. That's your PSA for the day. Any inspirational stories of prisoners and their faith in God, be sure to double check the facts on that.
Oh, so I was like Thoreau was jailed and that's where I realized like he spent like 2 days in the county lockup before his buddies bailed him
jail.
Out. He was fine.
Jail. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Having fun correlates to playing well. Sunday night, have fun, make plays, beat the Lions. There you go. Yeah, that's it. That's the formula. It's to have fun, and then you make plays, and then you beat the Lions on Sunday. Not a lot of confidence, I would say, on this text page here, Seth, about the game on Sunday. This old texteroo. There's not a lot.
Hey,
the Texans are at a low point in fan confidence for this game. I think the feeling right now, if I had to capture the feeling of where this team is right now, I would say it among fans. This is just from interacting with people on social media, the text page, out and about town. I interact with a lot of people, and the sense and understanding that most interaction, especially on social media, tends to skew negative. But I think the overall feeling that I'm getting right now is, we're going to win the division, and we're going to get a home playoff game. But there are three games left on the schedule where I feel we have zero chance of winning. That's what I think the feeling is out there.
Right? All right.
Lions, yeah, Chiefs, and Ravens. Those.
Well,
two.
No, and I think that you go back to 2012 where the Texans were rocking a hell of a record going into week 13.
They were 11-1 going into the Patriots.
They were 11-1 going up to play the Patriots. Yeah. And they'd shown weaknesses. They'd shown some chinks in the armor,
yep,
leading up to that game. And I think whether they were wearing Letterman jackets or not beforehand, I think there was a reckoning going up to play the Patriots, and that's when everything fell back down to earth. That's what this feels like. This Lions game right now feels like that's what it could be if they don't figure some things out.
Yes.
And, Nico Collins is way more of a factor than a wide receiver should be. And, yes, Nico Collins returning doesn't fix the issues on the offensive line as much as, say, Jarrett Patterson might. But he does make it a lot easier to operate. I mean, we're looking at just screens alone.
Yeah.
I had demanded Texans Cap to do some research for me,
yep,
the other day on a live stream, and he happened to watch it, so he did the research for me on screens. Because people will say, okay, well, gosh, if they're having trouble with pass protection, why aren't they running more screens? My answer is usually that, well, they're just really bad at running screens. They try, but they're bad at it. And lo and behold, Texans Cap delivered, and the Texans are in the dreaded lower left quadrant of,
oh, there's an XY graph out there for
rate,
it. Oh no,
success rate, and how often are they successful, and when they are successful, how successful are they? The answer is bad for both of those things. They're in the Texans are in that bottom quartile for success running screens.
Success running screens. Are you looking at the graph right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I make a prediction here that at the very other far end, the upper right, yeah, is the Kansas City Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs are up there, like the top 1, 2, 3, you know, these teams. I'm looking at a cluster here,
yeah,
of six teams.
Yeah.
Baltimore,
yeah,
Tampa,
yeah,
Miami,
yeah,
Detroit,
okay,
Buffalo,
mm-hmm,
Kansas City.
The interesting one in there is Tampa, and here's why I say that, and I'm just,
yeah,
I'm solely bringing this up based on this past weekend. And this is why, like, this needs to be, especially if there's no Nico Collins, Bobby Slowick needs to earn his salary this week. You got to find some things. You got to scheme some guys open. You got to find some tendencies that the Lions have defensively. I know it's not easy because we get told all the time how not easy it is to win in the NFL by all these guys. So it's hard,
yeah,
to win. I get it. It's hard to win. Bobby Slowick, if you are a future head coach, you have got to find a way to move the football in this game. And the reason I say that, Tampa Bay went into Kansas City on the road on a Monday night and move the football up and down the field without Mike Evans and without Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
They did it with Sterling Shepard as their number one wide receiver, and they used the tight ends and the backs, and they were able to move the football, get that game to overtime. Hell, if they go for two, they might walk out of there with a win instead of taking the game to overtime and letting Mahomes win the coin toss and win the game. So this is a you have to tackle game, and on offense, this is a Bobby Slowick game. Sorry, yeah, those are the rules you've been dealt. It's a Bobby Slowick game anyways, but especially if there's no Nico Collins. It can't just be you throw your hands up in the air, sorry, we can't move the football, we don't have Nico,
right,
Collins or Stephon Diggs. Oh, well.
Yeah. Tampa, by the way, one of the teams, the Tampa beat the Lions. Tampa's played.
They're the only team to beat the Lions, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
They've played some damn good teams and won or down to the wire.
Yes.
Including this past week, they played the Chiefs down to the wire without those two top wide receivers.
Correct.
I think that's where, with the screen, I think there's some formation tendencies, and then I think in the actual execution of the screens, they're not good at that either, and it's like the same thing that led to the Jets not being duped by that trick play is that, yeah, it was really easy to diagnose that that wasn't a run play. Like, it was obvious from the very first step of the offensive line that it wasn't a run play. And you get a lot of that in the execution of screens. All the little inefficiencies of the guys setting up the screens, those are all tells. And then you marry that to the down distance and situation, and Slowick's really bad at engineering screens unless he has his magical erase all issues Nico Collins in the game.
Yeah.
Nico Collins is 66% of the time they're successful running a screen versus, you know, 20% of the time with Diggs, 25% of the time with Dell. Mixon, 33% of the time they're successful. Ogunbowale, 66% of the time.
Yep.
I think some of that, by the way, though, with the Ogunbowale, I don't trust the way some of those advanced stats are put together. I think some of those might have been where he was, where it was an immediate, it was an outlet throw to, or a check down throw to Ogunbowale, but whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Text message, 5 Hour Energy fan line. Kubiak's teams were trash in the screen game in his early years, but got better down the line. Yeah, they did. They got better when they got better players, too. That helps. His early years.
Yeah, they weren't a good running football team.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really weren't a good running football team for several years. It took a while.
Yeah.
I'm not in the mood to wait until Arian Foster comes along.
No. You've got Joe Mixon. Like, Joe Mixon's been really good.
But Joe Mixon, I think, in the run game, I think the run blocking has improved and they've gotten better. I think part of that is probably just Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon knows what he's looking for. And is going to demand it of the offensive line and becomes a coach on the field in a way that some of the younger running backs or lesser running backs can't be. Because it's more and more I'm starting to see, oh, yeah, that was well blocked, and then Joe Mixon made something out of it, as opposed to, oh, Joe Mixon had 9 jump cuts behind the line of scrimmage,
right,
but turned it into a 10-yard run.
CJ had some interesting things to say about Joe Mixon. We'll get to those in the 8 o'clock hour. A lot of people weighing in. Oh, I know that you saw this, Seth, this texter on the 5 Hour Energy fan line. Did you guys see Chris Sims' breakdown of why the offense is struggling so badly this year? You were watching that before the show started today.
And I liked it. It was a lot of what I've been saying all along about the turn protection. I didn't watch it all the way through. I'm guessing Sims ended up saying this same thing, which is that you can do it. Some of the things the Texans had been doing and have been doing, you can do it for a while, but people figure it out. It's a little bit of a one-trick pony because it makes you very predictable and it exposes where your vulnerabilities are. And that's what we saw over the first part of the season was, oh, all right, they have to disguise and cloak and mask the weaknesses of this interior offensive line. We're going to take advantage of that. And it just, you can only do it for so long before ultimately you have to line up and play football. And that's where we're at with the Texans offense right now. Teams have already seen what they can do to cloak the issues and they know how to exploit it. So now you got to get back to just actually playing football. And they haven't shown that they can do that yet.
Yep. All right, Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. Texans Lions this Sunday, 7:20 p.m. Sunday Night Football. Should be a whole lot of fun. 4:20 will be Texans Countdown. You got me and Seth for Texans Countdown, and you got Clint and I on Texans postgame following the game. On Sunday, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. Hey, let's circle over to the Astros for a minute. One national pundit handicaps the chances of Alex Bregman coming back. Do we believe something that Scott Boras is saying about Bregman's suitors? And the Astros are shopping this guy. We'll tell you who it is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, GM meetings going on in San Antonio. Here was John Heyman. I believe he has been recently an Odyssey MLB insider, but he's a longtime baseball scribe, and he was asked yesterday about the chances of Alex Bregman coming back to Houston. Here's Bregman, what he had to say.
The Yankees question mark. Bregman's a fit for both New York teams. I think Houston's pretty likely for Bregman. I mean, they are talking at this point. The general manager of the Astros, Dana Brown, basically he's very optimistic about that yesterday. So I'm going to take him at his word. He's optimistic. Does that mean it's done or close to done? Not necessarily. I think they have a good chance. I think he'd like to stay there. I don't think he's like Altuve where he has to stay there, but I think he definitely would like to stay there. So I do think that Houston has a good chance to end up with Alex Bregman, outstanding player. And look at Matt Chapman got 6 for 151. I think we got to start there for Bregman. I think that's going to be the baseline, the floor, whatever you want to call it, that or higher for Bregman.
Okay, that audio courtesy of Bleacher Report walk-off. Look, John Heyman may know some things. Like, if part of his basis for his prognostication, Seth, is, hey, Dana Brown said this, so I got to take him at his word. I don't know that would be a huge part of my handicap there. Dana Brown saying, we think we got a really good chance of bringing Bregman back.
I think, but if you look at it with in a more nuanced way, it's okay. Yeah, like the Astros are really good at kind of giving non-answers or saying optimistic things when things are falling apart behind the scenes. Having said that, Dana Brown is usually pretty close to the vest in expressing optimism on bringing a guy back without actually making an effort to bring a guy back. So I think that the part that I keep wondering about is that we've seen Altuve weigh in on this far more heavily than he's ever weighed in on any imminent departure.
Yes.
And Altuve, but if I remember correctly, Altuve said they've got to get it done. Talking about both Bregman and the team. So I wonder if when it comes to maybe Bregman, I don't want to say giving a hometown discount, but maybe taking a shorter deal than he would prefer to get in free agency, maybe there is some way by which Altuve kind of really lays it on thick with, hey man, this is something special. You're a part of this. You're like let's work, you know, maybe you can work with the Astros to figure something out.
This is
that's not quite the market rate.
This is by far the most fascinating of all the potential free agent departures the Astros have been through, because I think the feeling was with Garrett Cole in 2019, he's gone. George Springer in 2020, he's gone. Carlos Correa in 2021, there was maybe a sliver of hope, but he's gone. Like, I think 95% he's gone. Verlander was probably closer. You know, the Verlander one in 2022 where he ended up going to the Mets, you know, that one was probably had a little more drama to it than the other previous three. This one really is, I won't say a coin toss. I put the possession arrow towards him leaving still, but I feel better about him staying than I did maybe at points during the season where it felt like all the reports were, well, he's gone after the year for sure. Like they were, people were reporting on it during June and July and throughout the summer, like it was just going to be the next in line with all these guys walking out the door. And he may ultimately leave Alex Bregman, but this sounds like this is way more of a negotiation going on. This is way more of a competitive situation going on. And that the Astros may, Seth, and they haven't said this, and Dana Brown hasn't said this, but they may realize, like, okay, this is the first one where if we lose him, we've got no good solution for backfilling him. And, oh, by the way, we only won 88 games last year. Like, you lose Alex Bregman, and now you're talking about flirting with these other teams in the division as to whether you're winning the American League West now, you know?
You know, there's this would be a weird comparison because it's two different ends of the spectrum. But okay, so the Astros, obviously championship team, have been really, really good for a long time. But there's just something about Alex Bregman that feels different than some of those other guys because of all of the intangibles. Aside from the on-field performance and playoffs, et cetera, et cetera, there's just something intangible that clearly Jose Altuve really values. Going into the 2006 season with the Texans, you know, in 2005, we were an expansion team that had had several years of like an ascension in terms of into getting to be like a 500 football team.
Yeah.
And it felt like, okay, this might be where we really turn the corner here if they can do some of the right things. They traded away Aaron Glenn, and that in the offseason, and that I can tell you as a player, it just felt wrong. Because Aaron Glenn, who ironically enough is the defensive coordinator for the Lions right now, coming back to town this week, Aaron Glenn was that kind of a guy that was just such a solid professional and was so good at working with younger guys and kind of setting expectations. He was a guy that was really well liked but could also say the difficult things and criticize guys without them taking it personally and all of that. And just kind of, he was an ultimate team player. It just felt wrong.
Yeah.
It just felt like, and then we ended up going 2-14
the next year.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now. You guys were 7-9. You guys had gone from, you know, the four wins the first year and then up to 7-9 in 2004. And then Aaron Glenn's gone. Next year's 2005, and you guys are picking first in the draft.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, going into the 2005.
Yeah. So
and I can't remember when that. I think it was in the offseason the trade was. And they brought in Philip Buchanan. That didn't work out instead of Aaron. And it just, that's what it, that's
a great
what
analogy,
feels like.
Seth.
It's what it feels like now. But I mean, it would be perfect if we, you know, Unfortunately, we didn't quite win a World Series.
No. But in a vacuum, those two guys, I think, have a very similar vibe to them, it sounds like.
Yeah. So, like, cause I can remember answering questions about it, and it was hard because I was out at some charity event. So, the media was in asking their football questions while I'm out trying to save the world. But they asked
about
it.
Yeah.
I was at some event the day after it had happened. Mm-hmm. And they ask you about it, and I'm pretty good at giving the cliche answers about, players leave, that's life in the NFL, all that. I had a really hard time answering the question because it felt wrong.
Yeah.
It felt like, man, I don't know, this is the right kind of guy. He's one of my favorite teammates ever in terms of just doing things the right way. And it felt wrong.
Yeah.
And it ended up playing out that way. We sucked.
Yeah.
We sucked really
the
bad.
Worst.
Now, just Aaron Glenn wasn't going to be the difference between us and being a good team or not. But it just, I felt like in line with a lot of the other decisions that were made that year and the things that led to us being so
bad. And I don't think losing Bregman means all of a sudden you're last place in the AL West.
Right.
But I think it is a step backwards in and out of the clubhouse for sure. Are you buying Scott Boras when he says that, teams are approaching Alex Bregman about possibly playing second base for them? Are you buying that?
Yes.
You are?
He talked about it. Because this was a talking point during the season.
Yeah.
And he brought it up, but it makes sense that there's no reason to think that teams wouldn't want to try him at second base if they've already got a good third baseman.
I guess. I mean, he's literally the best defensive third baseman there is. He won the Gold Glove.
That's the one thing that you feel really good about him in taking him despite his injuries and what have you and his long droughts as a batter. He's just, you can always rely on his defense.
I think it would be stupid for a team to pay Alex Bregman $30 million a year to play second base for them. Well, that's my point,
But I believe that teams are interested, but that they probably want to play second baseman. They want to pay second baseman rates.
It's
a way for Boras to put it out there as like, hey, there's lots of suitors, but I don't know if it's necessarily competition for the Astros.
I think it's good. If teams are looking for Alex Bregman to play second base, it means they're going to have to overspend there. So I'm curious just how serious teams are about that.
Yeah.
The other thing, just to pay off on the rest here, according to Chandler Rome, the big buzz with the Astros at the GM meeting, non-Bregman, is that they may be looking to move Ryan Presley. Presley's option for this coming season vested once he hit X amount of appearances this season. I think it was 100 and something appearances over a 2-year period or something like that. He's on the books for $14 million this year. And if the Astros are looking to create a little space here to get further underneath the competitive balance tax so they can fix other things on the team, I think moving Presley is a really good one. He has a no-trade clause, so the two sides are going to have to kind of collaborate on this. My guess is Presley's only going to want to go somewhere where he's a closer, not a setup guy. So, and his wife is from Houston, and his kids were born here. Like, this is not just a Alex Bregman's on the shopping block, give us your best offer and come get him. Like, Presley has to approve of wherever it is he goes. I approve of the Astros taking this approach. I think Ryan Presley is stepping. I think he's moving backwards as a player. I think he's regressing as a pitcher. I think he's still good, but he's not great. And we saw that, especially late in the season, we saw that. And I think Brian Abreu is perfectly capable of sliding up and being your eighth inning guy.
I think it's probably, too, for Ryan Presley just personally, and especially being from here, there's probably an element where, man, yeah, he did. He was a good soldier about getting demoted from closer, but it's hard to, as you age and you're facing that decline against a fan base that has different expectations of you, to probably, like what we were talking about earlier, to really enjoy playing baseball.
Yeah.
And a new environment might be best for him, to where he can go in and be the guy that's the older, scrappier reliever that can come in and give you some performances maybe above and beyond what people are expecting by name value or recognition. And, it just might be better for everybody.
Yeah, everybody's got a shelf life. His shelf life as an Astro may be done, and that's okay. That's okay.
But real quick, just to tidy up the Scott Boras stuff, the most cringeworthy quote I've seen this week.
Oh, no.
That Scott Boras said Alex Bregman provides, quote, an infusion of championship blood. He's AB positive.
Yeah, I saw that a few times. Yeah. I had to double check and make sure that was a real quote.
I thought Chandler Rome might have been joking when he put that. And I'm like, ah, Chandler's not really a fake quote joke type of guy.
No.
He takes his job as a journalist pretty
seriously. Who knew Boris was such a quipper? You know what I mean?
Like, well, he had that stupid nickname for Carlos Correa. Remember?
I forget. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Let's circle back. If you haven't heard yet, the injury news on the Texans. DeMeco was not very forthcoming with the actual news about Nico and Will Anderson. However, he was pretty forthcoming on his coach's show about how he handles injuries. We'll try to add these two things up here, and we'll do that coming up next.